Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 19th of January, the last full day of the Barack Obama administration. We will talk about many, many things on this morning's program, and we have a wonderful panel to discuss all of that. Why, Mike Spain is here. He's the associate editor of the Times Union. will be a guest on this week's Media Project program, filling in for Rex Smith, and we are delighted that he will be joining us this morning as well. Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Rosemary Armeo, also here, also a part of the Media Project this morning. And I feel like you guys have already, like, warmed up.
You're not delighted that I'm here?
I haven't gotten to that part
yet. Oh, okay. I like that part. That's my favorite line.
And Rosemary is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, and it is a delight to have you here, as always.
Yes, it is.
And then there's Nettle Boy. Good morning. How are you?
I got a nettle in my hand. I don't know how to, you know, those are the things that attach to your clothes when you're walking in the woods.
Yeah.
You know.
Were you walking in the woods?
That's a trick question, isn't it? But I actually took it off of Murray.
That's
how it happened. And I have this thing, and it hurts. What guy
Murray's a dog, by the way. How many letters
on nettle remover are you predicting that we received this morning?
12.
Well, I looked it up. I looked it up online, and there are 10,000 different answers, including one which said put Crest toothpaste on it. I mean, it's really...
Wow.
That's very specific, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's slightly abrasive, but still mild.
Well, so in front of you, you have a...
Hot water.
Hot water.
And then
you put your finger
like
in it.
Like you're getting
and then,
a manicure.
And then eventually it extracts the nettle.
No, well, the problem, I think, I read in one place, it's probably all wrong, is that the nettle is like what happens when your dog gets porcupine. Porcupine quill has a sort of a hook at the end of
yes.
it, and therefore it's hard to get the nettle out.
So this will straighten the
soften.
Nettle quill, soften,
yes.
and allow it to pull out.
I have no idea whatsoever.
Well, I hope you keep us updated throughout the
course of the
program.
But I'm not going to the emergency room for my nettle. Okay.
Was there a conversation about that? All right. Hey, we have good news. We have stuff to talk
not
about.
Good news.
You ready?
It's not good news. Bad news.
Well, this is good news.
No, it's bad news.
No, the stuff we're giving away is good news.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good news.
That's what I mean.
That's good news.
Okay.
Yeah.
The bad news is that we need to fill the lockbox. The total, and then I'll let Alan take over here, $310,244. But here's the bad news. We're looking to make $500,000 by the 6th of February, which is just 2.5 weeks away.
We have to make $500,000. That'll get us halfway. Look, folks, there's an awful lot going on. The First Amendment itself is under attack. There's no two ways about it. You got a president of the United States who's talking about moving the press corps out of the White House or into a different place, and you've got a terrible situation. All that stands between us and and disaster is going to be that First Amendment to the Constitution. And ladies and gentlemen, this radio station, which you, not me, or Joe, or Rosemary, or Mike, you have made, I can't believe that everybody won't get to WAMC.org right now and say, okay, Alan, I get it. I listen to the show every morning. I know how important it is. I know that we compliment you on having courage and being there for us. And I know this now, more than ever, we have to do this. And so, you know, we make $100,000 a day during the regular fund drive. The whole idea here is to get as much of it out of the way as we can so that we can continue to do the kinds of things we're doing on this show every morning. And so if you love the show, if you love the station, even if you have a reservation, get to the WAMC.org and just make that pledge and do it now, because we really are counting on you.
Now, look, there are a million reasons to do it, and now we get to one of them, which is, you know, greed. So if you want stuff, if you want swag, man, we have it for you. So The First Amendment, which I think for everyone in this room, that's our favorite amendment, isn't it?
So absolutely.
All right.
I kind of like the favorite.
I'm just taking out my checkbook right now.
All right. So this is a First Amendment T-shirt, and that you can either see this online. You can see it also at WAMC.org. I'm holding it up now.
It's really great.
Although to the wrong camera, but there you
go. I
need
to wear this on the march in Washington. I have to buy one today.
The only one, Rosemary, but I think we could probably hook you up. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, the First Amendment, it says the First Amendment, it has the WAMC logo. It is very beautiful.
And, I love it.
It is a beautiful T-shirt. It's kind of a soft color. What would you call that? It's kind of
beige
or
a taupe.
A taupe. Yeah, that's the word.
Taupe. That's good. I agree with that.
So there you go. There's the T-shirt. Now, that's $100, and we have them in sizes from small, medium, large, extra large, and double large.
Really?
2XL, yes.
And thankfully, the First Amendment is only what Joe read. It's 45 words. It's very, very succinct.
I offer an A to any student who can recite it by heart at the end of the ethics class.
Oh, that's very good.
Wear that T-shirt to class on the day you ask.
I don't think it's fair.
It's fair that it's only 45 words?
No, that Rosemary offers the A.
I don't tell them that.
I'm going to tell you why, because for those of us who ate paint chips very early and have no memory, we're at a distinct disadvantage.
Well, 30 young age.
That's why I asked her to wear the T-shirt to class when she asks him.
By the way, the new director of the EPA does not know about, he hasn't done any research on the effects of lead, and will try to figure out what the EPA accepts, which of course is zero. You can have no lead and it hurts you.
Of course.
Education secretary said she would try to find out about education.
Yeah, yeah. And then there is Rick Perry, who did not realize when he said yes to being energy secretary that meant taking care of the arsenal, the nuclear arsenal of the United States.
We're jumping ahead.
Sorry, news. We went on a news tangent. Darn it.
Okay, let me just sell the mug and the T-shirt, and then I'll get you back to what you have to do, okay?
We don't sell anything here.
No, I'm sorry. These are premiums, for God's sakes. But look at this. We also have a mug. This is what we call a mock-up, but this is the WAMC mug. It's the First Amendment mug. It has our WAMC logo on it, and then says, the First Amendment, now more than ever. So if you'd like the mug, $100. If you would like the T-shirt, $100. If you would like both, $150, and you get a deal.
But you know what I love about it more than anything else, Joe, is not only the fact that we can, and you're doing extremely well. We can hawk this stuff.
Oh, I can
you can also hack.
And then, you can do that too.
But also, I love on the cup. A brilliant mind came up with the idea. I think probably Colleen O'Connell.
Alan.
Okay, go ahead.
Under the First Amendment, it says now more than ever. And it really does speak to all of us who understand what we have here.
So
now the First Amendment, now more than ever.
Now, just think of that. The T-shirt, the mug, $150. We could sell out of those and make it to $500,000 by the time Donald Trump takes the oath of office tomorrow at noon.
We could. But less than 2 weeks now.
It's two and a half weeks.
2.5 weeks to do this in.
Yeah.
Now, we make $100,000 a day in regular fund drive. That should be doable. I just need everybody to say, okay, he's talking to me right now.
Now
I want to do something.
I am saying something on the radio.
I'll do it.
Thank you, Rosemary. I'm saying something on the radio that I think is true, and I'm sure people listening in the front office will make sure that it's true.
Fake news.
But that we also, on the drop-down menu, have the pictures of the T-shirt and the mug available. So if you want to see them, go to WAMC.org. You can check them out there. And if not, someone can come and get these and take a picture and put them exactly in that place. But I think that's all been taken care of. Anyway, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. And we'll be talking about that more later on. But I just wanted to start the discussion there. Rob, why don't we take a quick break? And then we'll be back and we'll start our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good Good morning. We have a lot of letters this morning, but so far they're all about Alan's nettle. But we'll move on to start talking about other things, and then we'll get to those later. And we thank you for your interest. Let us start and talk about what is going on in the world. As I said, the last full day of the administration of the 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama. The last news conference was held yesterday, and Barack Obama said that he said a lot yesterday, but basically he arrived in office 8 years ago. And so the George W. Bush essentially withdrew from public, declaring that his successor deserves my silence. It was an approach that Mr. Obama greatly appreciated, but does not intend to follow. At the final news conference of his presidency, Mr. Obama made clear on Wednesday that he finds some ideas advanced by President-elect Donald Trump so alarming that he laid out markers that would draw him back into the fray. There's a difference between that normal functioning of politics in certain issues or certain moments where I think our core values may be at stake, he told reporters in the White House briefing room. Mr. Obama continued, I put in that category if I saw systematic discrimination being ratified in some fashion. I put in that category explicit or functional obstacles to people being able to vote, to exercise their franchise. I put in that category institutional efforts to silence dissent or the press. And for me, at least, I would put in that category efforts to round up kids who have grown up here and for all practical purposes are American kids and send them someplace else when they love this country.
Rosemary.
Well, I love the press conference. I think he made, although he's not been a friend at all to the press, he made a great stand for why we needed the press. That was my favorite part of it. I also love the idea of a man who's like not even 60, and he is saying goodbye to possibly the most interesting and important part of his life. And that was kind of poignant and interesting. And I can't wait to see what he does next. It could be criminal justice, which he has shown a great interest in. I'd like to see him on the Supreme Court someday. Won't be in the next 4 years, I'm kind of predicting. but he is, it was terrific.
How about running for U.S. Senate?
It's been done before.
It's been done before, sure.
But nevertheless, I don't think, maybe the House of Representatives. John Quincy went back to the House of Representatives.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a moral force. I don't think we'll ever see anybody like him again. I do not think we'll ever see
him. We might see him, but we won't vote him into office because look who we're picking these days.
Well, the man is extraordinary. I sat in the car and listened to the whole thing.
It was riveting.
He was so good. He was so thoughtful. When he talked about his children and what he
wasn't thought. That a great question?
That was
and
a
answer.
Great question.
Wow.
It was the last question.
Yeah. The reporter has followed him since his days in the legislature in Illinois, and she said she was going to ask something, you know, routine. But as he was calling on her, she switched and asked about the kids, and she actually was getting thanked for asking that question because he sat back. He is a fantastic family person. And he is, in his administration, there has not been a single arrest or scandal in 8 years. Unprecedented. They've looked back as far as Reagan, who, the last time we had businessmen running the government, unprecedented numbers of corruption scandals. But under Obama, nothing. And his family, he loves those girls. He supports, uplifts. He is the embodiment of family values.
I thought the question was beautifully crafted because went in right into what Michelle Obama and the impassioned plea and speech that she gave prior to the election about Donald Trump and the concern that she had of what his words would have on her children.
Can you find the exact wording? That might be worth reading. That's something that in journalism school we'll talk about. That question really got to the president and it provoked an answer that was memorable.
I will look that up, and in the meantime, Alan is going to read a couple letters.
Well, actually, I will. We've gotten a great deal on nettles here. And Barbara says, good morning, dear panel, good morning. Listening to your first discussion and leading off with the Constitution reading of freedom of the press, are you aware the press is not being allowed into the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C.? I don't know if you guys read it, but we have a friend who has been with us for a long time. And when he was a kid, he used to write us almost every day, named Daniel Lippman.
And Daniel was the one who broke that story. He tried to get into a restaurant in the Trump Hotel with somebody, and they told him, and he mentioned that he was with the press, and they said, we're not allowing the press into the restaurant. Okay, so anyway, are you aware that the press is not being allowed in the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C.? They're being barred from entry by the doorman, a person... or doorman or person. Are there any door women? This is a hotel owned by the government. Please help me understand how this can be done legally. Thank you. And that's Barbara.
Well, how would they know someone is with the press?
Well, I think he said he's with the press. I'm not exactly sure why he did that.
Was he going in to interview people sitting at their tables eating, or was he going in to order lunch?
You know, I could make all of this up, but I don't know.
I've
just been reading his Facebook.
Seems to be the way it goes. You know?
He's a great guy.
I like that answer. I couldn't make all this up. I really don't know.
He works for Politico. Okay.
That is an honest answer.
And Lee says, give Rosemary the First Amendment T-shirt to wear on the march, then raffle it off during the pledge drive.
Oh, that's right.
With my body juices on it? That'll raise the value?
Rosemary sweat. Rosie sweat. Okay.
Okay, and there may be just a few more.
Let me just read this quote. This is the question, and then we'll go to a break. But the question that was asked was, Mr. President, I have a personal question for you because I know how much you like those. The First Lady put the stakes of the 2016 election in very personal terms in a speech that resonated across the country, and she really spoke to the concerns of a lot of women, LGBT, people of color, many others, and... So I wonder now how you and the First Lady on talking to your daughters about the meaning of this election and how you interpret it for yourself and for them. Wow. That was the question.
What a question.
It's a beautifully crafted question. And his answer was very long, very detailed, and it's all over, obviously, the Internet. So if you get a chance, you can take a look at the transcript, and you can also take a look. We'll be right back.
Yeah, that is.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we have a lot to talk about. We're going to go to some letters and then we'll go into a little bit of a rundown of some of what on yesterday during all of the hearings. And we'll let the panel take a bat at some of the statements and the highlights of Wednesday's confirmation hearings. Alan.
Well, we get a lot of letters about nettles. Alan, looks like you have a bit of a burdock, not a nettle, which stings with an acid. Burdock is indeed painful. The little hooks were the inspiration for Velcro. Did you know that? Really. Hope it comes out soon.
Listeners are amazing.
I hope it comes out soon. I have a lot of experience with these. Try cleaning them out of llama fur. She has llamas, Anna does. Thanks for all you're doing.
It's very specific, isn't it? I don't know.
I think I've seen them everywhere. I think they're everywhere, the burdocks, except I don't know that I ever saw one Rosemary on Fire Island.
My God.
Rosemary challenges me to say something about Fire Island.
And every program. He can bring it up no matter the topic.
Yeah, yeah. I read that a research scientist studied, said Henry, a nettle stuck to his clothing. He discovered the small barber hook at the end of it. This became the inspiration for the development of hook and loop fastener, now known as Velcro.
Right. Made the man wealthy. I think he was Swiss. I think it happened in the Swiss.
Yes,
Alps.
I remember when he passed. And yeah.
It was a great obituary in the New York Times.
Yes, there was.
Okay. And then I think that's it. There's one more about a nettle. It says, good morning, panel. Alan, that isn't a nettle. It's a burdock. Nettles sting, but don't stick. If you can tell us a way to extract burdock successfully, please let me know. My dogs get covered in them when they run in the fields. That's how I got the burdock, because I was taking it off of Little Murray, the world's greatest, smartest dog. And
Is there a metaphor for nettle or burdock at this important time as the Obama administration is transitioning?
Oh, don't try to bring the show back to
that. I'm sorry.
It's hints from Heloise now. There's nothing more we can do.
Yeah. I'm just going to read my iPhone.
And John says, in honor of the inauguration, the White Russian cocktail will now be called a Trump.
I love that.
That is great.
That's so funny. Oh, my gosh.
Well, the First Amendment is under attack. Well, let me use my First Amendment right to continue your thought and complete it. The president is talking about moving the press room out of the White House to a place that has more seating so that there are more journalists able to sit in it. It will not just be
the standard bearer of truth. Cough, cough. It is to allow more people access to press conferences. But thank you, WMC, as you save our First Amendment rights. Whatever.
But the president spoke yesterday the importance of having the press corps, and I know Rosemary has spoken out against this, but that the importance of having the press corps in the building, in the White House next to the president, and he said it put pressure on him, it put pressure on his staff, and that it was important to have that presence.
Obama was being very nice and generous and taking a shot at Trump because it did not work while he was there. He went to YouTube shows. He went to cable TV. He did not walk in there every time. Right. Right. It's symbolic pressure.
Wait a second.
Can't afford it anymore.
Wait a second. Does that mean you can't do both? You know,
it's an issue of resources. I think Rosemary brings up the point that, you know, maybe the New York Times and the Washington Post and the major news networks can do it, but a lot of the regional newspapers and the regional news services that have staffed the White House press corps for decades are having to make a decision whether to have reporters in the field or reporters sitting there most of the day reading the other's papers and reading the internet and waiting for an opportunity to ask one question or two to the White House press aide who may or may not come out. And the president, if he's going to continue, if President Trump continues the pattern that he's already set, like a press conference every 6 months, it's really not going to give them much opportunity to confront him.
I see.
Yeah, it's a really expensive press release operation.
Well, I mean, I think it's really a matter of both. And while I respect you so much, Mike, that I hesitate to even, you know, disagree with you.
Wait for it.
To disagree with you, I think there's some, and I know Rosemary feels very differently from me on this. I think there's something very important about the morning press briefings. I think what happens is you get a chance to take the news of the day or something that happened. Look, yesterday I was listening to NPR, which I didn't think did a great job setting up the president's press conference. It was all sort of blather. But at one point, they all agreed that the first question would be on Chelsea Manning. And of course, it was on Chelsea Manning, because that is the one place you really can confront a president or confront anybody and say, you know, you parted. What do you make of this? And that became a big story. So when Rosemary says, as she often does, nothing big ever comes out of those press conferences, I don't agree with that.
It's not the only place. He could talk to the New York Times. He could talk to one reporter who then puts it in his publication that's then picked up by all the others. It used to be the only place, but technology has surpassed us.
Do you think that collaborative approach
to covering the news these days.
But do you think that you guys are really a bunch of crybabies and that anything that happens to the press, you know, that you don't like becomes defensible from your positions?
Here's what I think. I think that we have valid concerns that we do whine and scream about. Protection of the First Amendment is our job. Access to information is our job. However, we do a really poor job convincing the public that we're doing it for them. They think it's, oh, you just wanted your job to be easy. Oh, you know, why should we care about it? That's only a press concern. We have not made the connection between us as representatives of the people. MSNBC has a series going on where they're going out and talking to Trump voters. Terrifying, by the way. And one of the things that's really obvious is that these people, these voters who are core supporters of Trump, see the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and the media as one and the same. That is our failing.
That's revealing. I think the outcome of the election and just the way the election was conducted, it demonstrates that there's a lot of Americans who do not trust the press, simply do not trust the press.
The numbers are falling.
You can use attribution, you can use videotape, and it still doesn't matter.
Right.
Can I, just because I'm curious about this, let me ask this question to both of you. And that is one of the things that we have heard, and I've heard this argument several times from journalists and people who follow journalism, that one of the things, as you said, Rosemary, the press hasn't done a good job, that you're doing it for them. That after really kind of looking at Watergate, that there was also the press got the reputation then of wanting to just go after something for the sake of going after something to further their own interest. And how do you change that dynamic?
Well, it was true for a long time after 1972 that you'd have a mayor who embezzled $80 from the town treasury, and the cover to the paper, the local paper, would look as if it were another Nixon, you know, violating the Constitution. It totally was out of whack for a while because that was such a swashbuckling victory for the press to question and bring down a president. I don't think that happens very much anymore. I think that if you look at most media outlets, it's overwhelmingly happy, good news, and there's one or two negative or investigative stories. But the perception is what's different. Most people don't read newspapers anymore. They're picking and choosing the stories they want to read online, and so that gives them a very skewed vision of the media.
So if they don't read newspapers anymore, Rosemary, how are you teaching your students at the University of Albany?
I ask that all the time. You know, Cooney and is that how you say it? The City University in New York.
Yeah,
they have a wonderful journalism school, and so does Columbia. And they're all looking at alternative ways to tell stories, using data, using visual aids, telling a story without
data visualization.
Exactly.
I don't quite understand. I'm old, but I don't quite understand what data visualization is.
Well, it's where
be.
You take statistics and a spreadsheet, and somehow you present it as an image that shows highs and lows. It's graphs and charts and pie charts, but it's done very dynamically.
You grasp it in a minute rather than slogging through, you know, a 300-word story.
I think you can on any, and I'm going to take a chance here, but I think on any day, and there you go,
New York
on any day you can see it in the New York Times.
Absolutely.
Where they have it.
They're
where,
very big into it.
Where you go right into, it's not a story, it's just an actual chart, and with details, and you kind of read it for yourself.
Yeah, they used to call them infographics.
Right. Yeah, but
it's very much a generational thing. I was saying on the media project today that I had really a lot of trouble understanding one of these presentations done on where universities draw their students from, the level of both income and academic achievement. That's a story I have a high interest in. I'm kind of an educated person, and I couldn't grasp it. It's like, oh, where's the story? I want to read the story to figure it out.
I'm working on
so
one.
It's very different.
I'm working on one in the difference between nettles and burdocks, and it.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean, Joe.
Yeah, see.
Big, lots of graphs and
right,
charts.
We're off the rails again,
you
Mike.
Have the, you
we
have
can
the
just
nettle on
now.
The left end.
You know, it's so easy and it's so glib to come up with that kind of an answer, as opposed to, we have students who can't really read that well. And now we're going to say, if we give them these demographics, it'll make a big difference, or these statistics. I don't think so. I think there will be some, but I don't think everybody will be able to ingest this. And I'm with Rosemary. I don't understand it either.
Yeah, so, I mean, what I have to do as a professor is just make sure the old values are transferred to the people who are going to use it in a different way.
Accuracy
and fairness and
balance.
It should
be noted that the person who puts together the graphic about how much, you know, the world has warmed this year and what the peaks were and everything like that really has to have a deep understanding of it to do that accurately and portray that effectively in a visual way. And, you know, in becoming a visual journalist, you still have to have the facts and you still have to understand the facts and you have to have some source for those facts, and somebody has to be assembling them and putting them together and analyzing them, etc. So what we're trying to do is recognize that people have just moments to glance at their phone or glance at the TV screen and get a little bite of a story and then move on. And that's a tough thing, because to really understand the news, you got to sit down and digest it.
I don't believe it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I
don't buy it. I think, you know, it's nice to have those things up there. But I don't think that we have the kind of mathematically literate or otherwise population that will be able, instead of reading a front page story in the Times that takes us through it, just gives us a couple of charts and graphs, and we're supposed to do it. I don't believe it. I don't think it'll work.
Well, a couple of charts, graphs, a couple of paragraphs, and then they have to trust the source, and that's all they have time for. And then they want to move on to something else.
Well,
that's the trouble.
They don't have any time. They don't have any time. That's a riot.
They have time for other things.
You're right. Where people have a busy lifestyle. So they're not giving the time that they used to give to understanding the news. They're so many competing.
They're actively turning away from it. In fact, they're spending their time on family and friends.
Quote from the Hill this morning, says David, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would be privatized, while the National Endowment for the Humanities would be eliminated entirely. And so the book burning begins, says David. I've been talking about this a long time, and I've been gotten two or three letters that says, you're just making this stuff up. But here it comes from the Hill this morning, a very good newspaper.
All right, I'm going to hold you there, Alan. We're late for a break. Let me take a break, and we'll be right back with more discussion, letters, and much more after this.
Support comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. nature.org/Adirondacks. And Darrow School, a college preparatory school for grades 9 through 12, emphasizing innovation and project-based learning. First-round application deadline for admission February 1st. DarrowSchool.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion. Alan has a fistful of letters, one of my favorite movies from the 40s.
Me.
And we'll start with those.
Okay. The saddest sight yesterday, the 48 empty seats in the press room after the news conference. Just saying, says Steve. And Annette says, can you please stop your reporters from the negative, immature connotations regarding our new president? The negative vocal inflections are at best childish. This is our president, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
My horoscope today is something like, just accept what you can't change. And my mother at breakfast reads it to me and looks at me and says, he is the president. There's nothing you can do.
And tell it to the 250,000 people who will be marching in Washington and New York. Just accept it. Go away. John says, IRS and tax exempt status for a large number of Republican organizations. Remember the taking of the fifth? The story started with the IRS admitting wrongdoing. 2, Fast and Furious. 3, lying to the public about ACA.
These are scandals of the Obama administration.
Yes. Keeping your doctor, keeping your plan, and Benghazi. I could perhaps, said John, who often writes to us, write perhaps 10 or more.
You could analyze every one of those, and they don't measure up to the real scandals that have plagued other administrations.
Or the kind of personal greed, which we see, for example, this morning with David Sampson. Is it David Sampson? John Sampson? The former Senate leader.
The New York State Senate leader who went off to jail.
Who's going off to jail for 5 years. Brucey says, here's what she says. Does this illustrious panel have any thoughts on why Paul Tonko is attending the inauguration? The boycott is up to 65 now, I believe. Well, the president said yesterday, all I know is I'm going. people go if they want to. I respect those who don't go very much, and I respect those who do go. That's their choice.
Well, does it mean if you don't go and you're an elected member of Congress and you don't go to the inauguration that you're asserting that you don't regard the president as your legitimate president or commander-in-chief? I don't know that it does.
It could
be that I just don't want to go because I don't like the guy.
It could, yeah.
So let's play the what-if game.
Okay.
What if?
What if? So what if you were a congressional representative from your respective areas? Mm-hmm. Would you go to the inauguration?
Well, Alan will go first and say to you this. I was offered a wonderful seat by a congressman. They each get one seat to give away at the Obama inauguration. And I don't like to be in crowds, so I didn't go. And it had nothing to do with not the fact that I didn't love the guy. I did. But I don't like to go to things like inaugurations.
Well, then
like
you might not be a good candidate for Congress.
If you, but if you have a congressional, would you go in Congress?
Hell no.
I would go. I don't have any respect or like for Donald Trump, as you know. But this is the inauguration is about the presidency and democracy, for which I do have a lot of respect. I give a credit to the grace and chutzpah of Hillary Clinton, who is going for that very reason. I think it's really different for artists. They don't have to pay the same respect, and I think that they're not attending the inauguration has to do with speaking out against what Donald Trump has said about gays, lesbians, minorities, women, whatever. And so I think both positions are principled.
Well, yes, but what if you were John Lewis and he said, you know, this guy is basically an illegitimate president. I think that's true. He was elected under some very interesting premises. He lied a lot. He said things that weren't so. He was misogynist. He was this. He was that. No, I think there's a very good reason for, if you respect the presidency, for not going.
Yeah, I mean, I so admire John Lewis. I think the fight with Trump was crazy. But then it turns out, and Trump was the one, unfortunately, who found this out, unfortunately for him, that
people.
He also boycotted the last Bush inauguration.
Using the same argument that it was illegitimate.
Yeah, we talked about this, right? Yeah.
After 2000.
That blunts the whole thing. I mean, you can't call every president we elect that you don't like, every Republican, illegitimate. I think there are
reasons to say that about Trump.
But John Lewis has said it about the last.
I saw Al Gore get up and say, "I'm the president. I should be the president." That's illegitimate, isn't it? If they robbed that election.
But that was later.
He did accept
the outcome.
He accepted it very graciously and statesmanlike.
Yeah.
I mean,
our system is the Electoral College, and if there's a dispute, it ends up as this one did in the courts, and the Supreme Court ruled wrongly, I think. But we lived with it.
Mike Spain, would you go
as a member of Congress, if I was elected, I would go.
Yeah, I would too.
I would feel it's part of the entire process. And even though you might disagree with Obama, and I don't know of any.
It seems
boycott
as it's part
events.
Of your job. You're representing the people, and you're representing your district for that particular event. And by the way, the people watching is going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're approaching it from a journalist point of view. We just would love to see it and love to sort of be a part of it.
It also isn't going to be hideously cold, which has not been the case in many other inaugurations.
A point that Obama made yesterday,
the
first inauguration. But Mike, there are people who are now, look, if you believe that Donald Trump is a very dangerous man, if you believe that Donald Trump is a guy who can lead us into fascism and may be willing to do that, if you remember Hitler and the people who said of Hitler that he was just a fool. He didn't mean any of the stuff he was saying. And if you're convinced of that, why in the world wouldn't you do things like tell people, don't watch the inauguration, let his ratings be low, or don't go, or boycott it? Seems to me those are all things.
But I disagree. I think people need to watch as difficult as it may be for people who don't like Donald Trump, I think it's really important for them to watch his inaugural speech, to know what the message is and to know what he's saying and to be informed about it and to continue to make their decision about whether he will make the pivot that we know he so far has been not willing or not able
when
to
When are
make.
You going to give that up?
The pivot. It's still a possibility that he'll wake up and say, "I'm the president. I got to cut this baloney out."
I gotta agree with Rosemary. I don't think we've seen it. We've been waiting for 2 years for a pivot. We haven't seen a pivot.
I'm not saying sit back and do nothing. I'm saying stay active if you disagree with him. But you can't disagree with someone if you're not keeping track of what he's saying and doing.
You don't have to watch it to keep
to
track.
Answer.
Or you can just watch a chart in the New York Times tomorrow and see what the high points are.
To answer Alan's question, though, which I thought, it phrased that way. Yeah, I agree. If you're phrasing it the way of you're going to go to support the president. But I think to what Rosemary said, if you're going to go to support the transfer of power, to support democracy, to support the former president and the former presidents who are on that dais. I think that is important. I think there's a decorum to the government that has to be respected.
And let's hope it is respected by the new president.
Well, that's out of our hands. And what we
but
can
it may
do,
be too late later.
Right, but I think what we can do is look at it and be watchful. I don't think it means that we're supporting that person or that cause, but we are supporting the peaceful transfer of power.
Listen, I get both sides, but let's assume
that's why I like the what if game.
Yeah, but let's assume that his process, his way of getting elected, was despicable and really in many ways illegitimate. Then why in the world? And remembering that Hillary Clinton won the election, she got the most popular votes.
She got the most popular votes.
He won the election. She got the most popular votes. He's going around even now lying, talking about his mandate. One more lie. No, I don't think you support that kind of behavior.
If a congressman is an elected congressperson is disgusted by Trump and cannot, you know, and believes as you do that he's going to turn our country toward fascism and wants to do it by publicly protesting and not going to it. That's their right. They're making a stand. Others would I think Rosemary articulated it very well, would say it's beyond who the guy is who's getting sworn in. We're there to support our country and our system, and good or bad, I'm standing by it.
I could see myself going both to the inauguration ceremony to do that, and then the next day being among 200,000 women in Washington.
And that's not inconsistent.
No, yeah. Exercising First Amendment right and reminding this new president that you do not have a mandate. You have won the election, and you are on probation right now. We are watching you. And here are our issues, and we will not be silent. And I think that's an amazing thing.
That's the system, too.
I'll change my mind if there's any kind of violence.
All right, we're going to pause there. We're going to go to a news break. We'll be back in just a few moments after the news, and we'll continue. Alan has a lot of letters. We want to get on, talk about the hearings as well. A lot to talk about. We'll be back after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Quick programming note, a reminder that our program, the Roundtable and the Roundtable panel, will commence at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, but we'll only be on for an hour tomorrow because beginning at 10, we will have coverage of the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States. And that begins at 10 o'clock with the swearing-in, of course, beginning at noon. So we'll be on with that for the day tomorrow, but we will have a panel from 9 to 10 tomorrow morning.
And I'll be on with you from New York because I'm going to be covering the New York March for WAMC.
And where's that going to be? Columbus Circle?
No. It starts at Dag Hammarskjöld.
Oh, across from the UN over to Fifth Avenue.
Plaza, and then it goes up to up Fifth Avenue and over to Trump Tower, basically.
Cool.
Are you going to march that whole way?
I don't march. I'm in the press corps. I'm going to be sitting with the press.
Oh, you're just going to watch. So you're going to watch it more as a parade.
I know somebody who I'm very close to who's going to be marching.
Gotcha. Okay, so we go to a lot of letters that we have, and
we
want to get to those letters, and then we'll move on and go to other stuff.
Okay, Alan, I think you're great and a much-needed voice in our country, but you're wrong. Trump won the election. How did he win? He received enough votes in the Electoral College. The popular vote does not matter with respect to winning the election. I don't agree with this either, but please stop saying that Trump did not win. In my mind, he didn't win. She got more votes. He did. Perhaps not legitimately, but he won nonetheless, and that's Cody in Greenfield. Okay. I have wonderful national congressmen and representatives.
Yes. I'm sorry. Can I just pause right there? I mean, I think this thing about legitimacy, the legitimacy that John Lewis was questioning was not the Electoral College. It was the Russian interference.
Right.
And that was the concern about the legitimacy of the election. So I just want to clear that.
Good point.
I mean, the numbers are the numbers and legitimately elected. The question being, was there interference? And that question hasn't been answered yet.
Listen, I've been teaching politics for a lot of years, and I got to say, the Electoral College was sort of a thing that was to prevent tyrants and the rest of it. But in fact, just the opposite happened. Okay,
we'll see, won't we?
No, we already know. Yeah. Pat says, I have a wonderful national congressman and representatives. Does it make an impact if I write to congressmen from other states that do not represent me? That's from Pat. Of course. You know, I mean, what, as the old saying goes, with chicken soup, right? Could it hurt?
No. If you have a particular interest, like in farming, and the head of the farm committee is in Iowa, you know, you absolutely, as a United States citizen, have a right to petition that congressperson.
Michael says, Rosemary is right. They should all go to the inauguration no matter what they feel about the winner. However, they are free to dress in mourning if they wish.
Sean, yeah, that's been done.
You can wear that First Amendment T-shirt, right.
Sean says,
there you go.
How about the beginning of the profiting from the presidency by raising all the inaugural money and spending much less than others? I'll be at the march with my two daughters. But by the way, Sean is female in this case, and that's from Sean.
I don't get that. Trump raised far more money than
his presidential inaugural committee actually raised more private money, and they didn't spend as much. So I don't know where the extra money is going
to
go.
Yeah, that was my question. Yeah. What happens to it?
But it's private money, right?
I mean, yeah.
Put it in. Oh, yeah. You can do anything you want with it.
Our old friend John says, with respect, I believe Alan may be caught in the old paradigm of how people consume information. In fact, the millennial generation is very informed and is extremely proficient. You see this in your classes all the time, don't you, Rosemary?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you don't. proficient. Better than past generations at cutting through rhetoric and getting to facts. You saw that with huge rallies for Bernie Sanders, whose rallies were closer to economic lessons than traditional political rallies. I am far more optimistic about this generation. Well, John, as much as I respect you and always think of you.
Unfortunately, the millennials did not turn out in large numbers. And had they turned out in large numbers, given the polling of where they stand, the election probably would have went differently.
Can I go on a tangent here to say that I have not said many nice things about Bernie Sanders, but I think he has been magnificent in the nomination here. Yesterday, when he was questioning Price about health care, and Price goes, well, you know, he's trying to duck a question about giving health insurance
people
to
access.
More people. He goes, well, we're a compassionate nation. And Sanders just went off and said, we are not in the way we treat poor and disabled people. And it was really, really
it was profound.
Amazing. It was.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
go
and
Bernie.
I think there may be a big difference between the ability to ingest information given to you in infographics. and having an intuition about what kind of politics we want to practice in the United States. So I think maybe that's not right. Rosemary, Charles Blow, the gifted African-American New York Times columnist, is responsible for the visuals accompanying the op-eds. Let's credit him. P.S., his memoir about growing up in the South is luminous and frank.
That's fantastic.
I love him.
But the point I just want to say the point there was the graphics accompanying the editorials and the commentaries. And it goes hand in hand. And when you take one without the other, when you take the graphics without the text and the context, that's where I think there's a possibility of misinterpreting them.
Joe, did you have Blow on your show?
We did. We had him on the book show, and you can go to wamc.org/bookshow and hear it. He is a very insightful, and the story is horrendous.
Wow.
And his upbringing and what he went through. And for anyone who enjoys his columns, for anyone I think who is interested in journalism and sort of the seeds of a journalist, should read it. It is a really fascinating book. With that said, also just about growing up in a very racist South.
Once again, Joe Donahue Poos, he has read every book, at least those written in
English. I have never asked a question. But we have discussed a book here. I have never asked a question. Did you have him on the book
and
show?
He says, no, I haven't read that.
I have never heard such a thing. It's always, yes, of course we did. And that's why WAMC is better than anybody else. Really?
Okay. I just think it's just from doing it a long time. Right?
No.
Eventually, you've got everybody.
Forget it. Where else in America do you find this? Okay.
You're very
Hello, panel. Reading the front page of the New York Times, most people I know don't even read their own mail. Video is king, and short video at that. Sorry to bring this up again, but The Daily Show is another great venue that gets across in-depth information in a timely, concise, and visual format that many millennials enjoy. He presents it in a trustworthy fashion, too. But here's the point.
Actually, my kids are not watching that anymore, either.
What?
John Stewart and Trevor Noah now. No,
mine never did. I used to watch, even when at the height of John Stewart's fame, ask my students, they would never watch it.
Let's remember, it's on the Comedy Channel. However, if you think about it for a minute, it's a lot more accurate than most of the news you see.
Well, it is.
I think it's great. But not watching it.
And what they are watching are the videos, the viral videos that
the
come
YouTube
out of that.
Stuff.
Yeah, right. That come out of Samantha Bee, that come out of John Oliver, that come
right.
out of Trevor
Noah.
Noah.
Right, they're
Seth,
not watching
Seth
it
Myers.
Necessarily on their television. They're watching it on their phones.
This is the news media, right?
Rosemary
now.
Has
well,
a phone.
I got my
in her
iPhone
hand.
To the microphone. Yeah. Yeah. That's the news media now.
You know, video is different than just a chart. You
yes,
know, you
I
actually
agree.
Get to
oh,
see
yeah.
the person saying
Absolutely.
It. You see the context of it, and you can sort of judge for yourself the authenticity of it. And the context, you know, with the John mm-hmm. Oliver, whoever it is, Trevor Noah, setting it up the proper way.
Rick says, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, Therese will be here tomorrow, but I'll take on the wonk role for the moment, which is that...
That's said affectionately, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love her. But when you have those New York Times 360 cameras, when they go on and the panoramas and they take... Oh, my goodness. That is great, great photojournalism.
And they even have the little 3D glasses in a box that they
gave out for
a while.
And you drop your phone into it and you can see that.
Yeah,
you see
love that.
But, I mean, this is going into so you can see an attack, so you can see war,
right.
so you can see,
right.
I mean, the impact of what is going on.
Protests.
And protests and bringing you really down to the ground of what's going on. I'm sure they will be at the various marches.
And will you remind everybody who has no idea what you're talking about what that is?
Well, it's a 360 cam, and it's on New York Times.
The photographer stands in one place and then just turns around so that you,
well,
when
camera,
you're looking at
camera
it, the camera
spins.
Does, of
yeah.
course. So that
is it
when
real
you're
time or
at,
what?
Yeah.
No, usually it's recorded, and then you can sort of just pan it on your phone or on your computer.
Right.
But, again, none of that by itself will do it. It's the context of the words.
And then telling
them
what the reporter was seeing as right. they were going on, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick says, did you hear that Trump wants his first dance at the inaugural to be Frank Sinatra's My Way? To which Nancy Sinatra tweeted, remember the first words to that song are, the end is near.
That is true. That was a great tweet last night from Nancy
That's so fun.
Barbara says,
oh, I love it.
Since this gratefully turned into a medical show, please tell Joe that I've read the same awful cough for weeks and eating red hot peppers has miraculously cured me. Salsa,
I'm in.
Salsa or any other spicy food will work.
All right.
I was listening to something on the BBC yesterday. They were doing a big thing on backs, and everybody has a bad back. 80% of Americans have had a bad back. And yes, everybody here raised their hand. And yet, what the one thing that they know, that this lady from Britain who has really done this work says, well, you know what? After 6 weeks, we know that backs get cured.
Oh, man, I wish that were
Think
true.
Think about that. Well, certainly that didn't happen with me. She made allowances that there were people who didn't, but I had an operation which really did cure me. But I think regular lower back pain does tend to go away and then come back if you're vulnerable. Okay.
That's my experience.
Good morning, panel. Sadly, I have, because there are some professionals, in quotes, who get the benefit of saying, I've cured you, but just because you've been around. You understand what I'm talking about now? No. In other words, if you've been around, if you go to a medical professional, there are some types of people who work on your backs.
Yeah.
You know, healers and stuff like that. And after 6 weeks, you're healed. But that's you're healed not because of them,
because
of time.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good morning, panel. Sadly, I have no advice on nettles. But considering how strongly President Obama has spoken to the press about the importance of our peaceful transfer of power, why is the U.S. press reporting nothing to contrast the exact opposite in Gambia? Gambian President Jemma has been threatening not to step aside 22 years following the results of the December 1st election. Ladies and gentlemen, listening to WAMC this morning.
I heard it all.
On the way in.
That's right. The Rachel Maddow last night.
The entire
time. It was just on at 9:30.
So yeah. I love once again hearing about...
On the BBC.
Why is the U.S. press reporting
press.
Nothing? Okay.
Yeah, it was Rachel Maddow's lead-in yesterday.
Okay. There you go. Linda says, good morning, panels. Just watched Rachel Maddow's show from previous evening. She was pointing out that many, many, many unacceptable nominees for high positions preferred by the incoming administration. She also discussed that there are many positions that have not been filled at all in a very important non-cabinet positions. Perhaps no one who is actually viable will want to have their reputation stained by what I suspect will be a disaster at governing. Hard to find openings if no one is interesting. I think that's just wrong. I mean, I think a lot of people sell out very easily. Just look at Mitt Romney paying homage to this guy.
Good point. Jobs are hard
to come
by.
He's selling out and paying homage to the elected president, but... you know, what's the difference between that and people just respecting the office and trying to do the right thing and raise the bar a little bit?
The real question here is, as each of these people come on before their Senate inquisitors and say, I disagree with the president. I think the Russians are bad. I think there is global warming. I think, you know, our education system could use this or that. And they say the opposite of what the president has been saying all along. One just wonders whether they mean it or whether they don't mean it, whether they're just trying to get over or whether, in fact, they'll stand up to him. I don't know. Sid says, a great example of visual expression of news would be the video presentation I saw on BBC America and the PBS NewsHour late last night, which show how Earth has gotten hotter over the time. And we know that is true. And Mary says, I've been struck by the inability of the selections by President-elect Trump to see their incompetence in the fields in which they are being asked to assume great responsibility. It is a perfect example of the Dunning-Kruger effect. And it's frightening. Anybody familiar with the Dunning-Kruger?
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
No? Don't know.
Okay. Good morning, panel. Alan, I think you're a great and much-needed voice in the country, but you are wrong. Trump won the election. How did he win? He received enough votes in the Electoral College. Okay, we got that. And let's see. Okay. I will not be watching the inauguration. I call him our new Teflon Don, has revealed himself as a totally despicable person. We can only judge him by what he has said and done, not by what he might do and say. Until he proves otherwise, he will not be my president. Ursula from Montgomery. And Philip says, as a STEM person, I'm a little concerned about your dismissal of graphical representation of complex data, the complex infographics that the New York Times and Scientific American and many other publications are running are wonderful ways to present a large amount of complex data in relatively simple ways.
No, I'm not dismissing it. I agree with that. I am
on our side.
Yeah, I'm bemoaning the fact that I don't get it.
And I think there are an awful lot of people who really don't, you know, in other words, if we're trying to, Rex is always talking about, you know, teaching people news literacy.
How to decipher what you see.
And what percentage are capable of doing that when a Rosemary or an Alan tell you, hey,
They're different things. I don't question the validity of the graphics. I just cannot absorb the material the way I can in writing. News literacy is about, is this propaganda or is it real? Is this fake news or not?
Sure.
Is it properly attributed?
Nevertheless, we want to use, I mean, I'm all for doing whatever people need. And if you happen to be an economics guy from MIT, that's nice. But what I'm talking about is, how do you get news and information to people who really need it? And is this new way to do it?
Well, you present it in many different ways, and that's what's happening.
Yes, and then you look at the percentages of understanding from the people who are looking at one thing or looking at another. And I think what you'll find is, I'm right. That's it.
Last story of the day, Governor Andrew Cuomo emerged from an hour-long meeting with Donald Trump on Wednesday saying that he had delivered his primary message to the president-elect. Their home state, New York, benefits from federal support for housing, health care, and infrastructure and would be harmed if that support diminished. Alan.
Well, look, he's between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, he's got a left wing he's been trying to appeal to by doing a number of good things, in my opinion, like college tuition and other things. And on the other... and he wants to run for president. That's clear to me. But he's got to go pay homage to Trump, because if Trump takes away Medicare, for example, or does something with that, that's the end of the New York State budget as we know it.
Right. The governor just released his budget this week, and he says he really doesn't have a plan to account for how they'll cover the Medicaid expenses if the federal government backs out of its commitments that they've made under Obamacare. It could be a couple of billion dollars that the state treasury just doesn't have.
It was his father, Mario, who once said to me, one of the best things he ever said is that good politicians will say, okay, if you do this, then I'll do this. Then if you do that in response to this, then I'll do that. Believe me, Andrew Cuomo knows what he's going to have to do if this Medicaid bubble occurs.
It won't be pretty.
I would like to see Cuomo do what is happening in California, and that's becoming an organized block of resistance to keep the values of well, liberal values alive, and that means defending the environment, protecting education.
Well, that raises a good question. Was this the right thing to do to go hat in hand to the president-elect?
Did he go hat in hand, or was that like a colossal ego fight on the top floor of Trump Tower?
Well, he didn't publicly criticize him. He went in saying he wanted to have a civil conversation. I don't know what happened behind the closed elevator doors.
I think he was invited, correct? Wasn't he invited?
I don't know.
I think he asked for this.
He asked for it. And he wanted to talk about infrastructure and
I think he's trying to be conciliatory. I mean, you can only at least give him a chance as president to be the way you expect
to do
him
the
to
right
be.
Thing, right.
Or to do the right thing and be shocked.
We
some people would be. I don't know.
We're not going to have time for it, unfortunately. But the Rosemary talking about California. There's a great article in the New York Times about California and leading the resistance on so many of these issues, and doing so very quickly and very effectively.
Really organized. Very.
And all the people who are running for governor. Jerry Bannon is not running again. All the people who are running for governor are just as good or better than he is on this issue.
Yeah.
All the Democrats.
Better than Brown.
And they hired Eric Holden, too, because they're expecting that there will be challenges to federal action. And California is going to lead the way.
And this is going to be, as I said yesterday, I believe, the redefinition of American federalism, the sharing of power between the states. And a Supreme Court is going to make that decision, as they always have.
Well, should New York be joining California?
Yes, that was
the
my
way?
Point. Maybe not leading the way, but joining with California. Yeah.
They're referring to it as CalExit.
Well, they're saying it won't be CalExit. Yes. That's just being cute. That's the media being cute.
We love when the media is cute.
Yes,
of course. All right.
One last thing.
Yes,
Michael writes in and says, good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Michael says, Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias.
Okay. So you're aware that you can't see things, or
which,
you just can't
in
see
which
things.
Low-ability individuals suffer from illusory superiority, mistakenly assessing their ability as much higher than it really is.
Stupid people think they're smart? That's it?
Well, no, but it also...
I think that sums it up.
Okay.
Well, it also could apply to certain politicians, if you think about it.
Really?
Suffering from Dunning-Kruger.
Meanwhile, George, we've been talking about, George wrote in and said an alternative to the inauguration. What do you do from 12 to 2 tomorrow? And he said, I plan to have a ceremonial reading of Yertle the Turtle instead.
Oh, I know people are watching West Wing.
Yep.
You know, where there's a wonderful president with a PhD in grace and smarts and liberal values.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Mike. And Rosemary, you're headed down.
We leave early tomorrow morning.
So I think you'll be on our air talking about those experiences.
Oh, I hope so. That'd be fun.
Oh, didn't we tell you about that?
No.
Okay.
That's okay.
Right.
I'm ready.
Excellent.
I'm not an unbiased observer, though. You realize that.
I think you've made that clear.
I think you have to point out that you're not going as a journalist. You're going as a citizen.
I am a professor. I'm very delighted to be because journalists right now cannot go. My sister works for the Washington Post. She is not demonstrating. She may not. But I can.
Excellent. Alan will be down at the march in New York, so we'll hear from him tomorrow as well. And
I'm not going to be participating in any protests. I'm going to be in the newsroom watching the inaugural on Tuesday.
Right. And you'll be back here on Tuesday morning.
Right.
Excellent. Godspeed to all of you.
And don't let anybody nettle you.
We'll be back after this.